What's good, everybody? Pete Jensen and Rob Reese back with you here on NHL Fantasy on Ice, talking fantasy, spinning things forward from a crazy draft weekend. Robbie, how you been, man? It's been a while. We got a new team since we last talked with the Seattle Kraken and a ton of trades, man, over the past couple of days. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Petey? Good to see you as well. And yeah, I think for, I guess the past few years, right, like around the trade deadline, we're like, okay, this is going to be the year where the dam bursts and all these moves are made. And then we kind of said it the next year, it didn't happen, and the following year. And now finally, with the expansion draft, I think the dam finally burst. We got all the moves, and a ton of these ones are fantasy relevant too. So maybe let's start with one that really stood out to, I think, each of us, Pete, over the weekend, was Sam Reinhart, acquired by the Florida Panthers. I mean, let's talk about an absolute slam dunk of a team that really feels like they're going for it all.
For sure. I mean, we look at this roster before the Sam Reinhart trade, right? We were really high on this group, especially with Spencer Knight coming into the fold as a full-time NHLer next year. Aaron Ekblad coming back from injury. Who knows if they had Aaron Ekblad in the playoffs? I keep thinking about that. Would they have taken the Tampa Bay Lightning even deeper than they already did? But now you get Sam Reinhart in the mix. And Robbie, I think you agree with me. I would go out on a limb. I don't even think it's a limb, and say the Panthers may have the best top nine forward group in the entire league. They got prospects to integrate. They still got their two superstars in Barkov and Huberdeau. It's just a really exciting group. And it sounds like, you know, Sam Bennett's going to be back, and you know, so many dimensions of this Florida Panthers forward group. And now Sam Reinhart, 25 goal scorer in a shortened season, tied for 11th in the league. So you got to love this trade if you're a backer of the Panthers or anybody that is invested in them fantasy wise or betting.
Well, let's just think about this. Sam Reinhart was on pace for 38 goals as a Buffalo Sabre, one of the worst offenses in NHL history, in my opinion, at least from a fantasy lens. All right, this is just fantasy. But that is crazy. And if you think about that, just relative to the division and everything that was going wrong for that team, put him on a team like Florida, who, by the way, I mean, their top six last year was so good because they had guys like Carter Verhaeghe take a big step forward. Duclair really made an impact when he was healthy. Patrick Hornquist was a great fit there. Like, when we looked at that top six going into last season, it wasn't even that great. It was just really good because they all found chemistry. And then when Bennett joined them prior to the trade deadline, that's when we saw that offense take a next step. Now they get a star in Reinhart. And I think that is just the icing on the cake. That team's going to be explosive. They could put him on the right side of the top line. He could play center on the second line. It doesn't even really matter. And then with injuries, you know, you can kind of plug and play whatever way you want. So I think it's a great trade. And absolutely, I think Sam Reinhart is going to finish top 50 overall in fantasy next season.
Top 50. I love it. He almost finished around top 100 on the Sabres, who had no supporting cast. Previously, you looked at Reinhart as a product of Jack Eichel. You can't put that claim on him anymore, on his back, because he really had his best season of his career, whatever, 7 years in the league, something like that. When Eichel was not there. So the maturation, taking advantage of a tough situation and really benefiting it for him. He was one of the few guys that gained value last year from the Sabres. Everybody else took big steps back. And then you look at the lineup overall, they can withstand. That's the thing we always look at with these teams. Are we getting too high on a team after just a couple of moves in the offseason? I don't think so with the Panthers, because they have the goaltending. Even Bobrovsky last year in the regular season was, you know, taking advantage of the goal support. They were a top five offense. He can hold down the fort if he needs to. And then they also have these prospects, like they have Lundell, they have Lomberg, who had a big playoff moment. They, of course, have Denisenko. So even if they have like two or three injuries to that forward group, they're still going to be well-equipped to make the playoffs, even in a very difficult division. I know everybody can always say, you know, the Florida Panthers haven't made the playoffs in, you know, God knows how long, but I think that's going to, you know, haven't won a playoff series, I should say, but that might change this year. I think it will change.
So two more things I've thought about this trade now that we had some time to reflect. The first being that you and I have been high on Florida coming into almost every season in a row for like the past 3 or 4 years, Pete. And I think we were a little too ambitious early on, right? Because we were expecting guys like Barkov and Huberdeau to kind of be doing what they're doing now a few years ago. So it was just a little bit early, but now it's very, very safe that this team is going to take that step forward. The only thing I guess that hinges on for a deep playoff run would be the success of Spencer Knight or the resurgence of Sergei Bobrovsky. But I would bet on, you know, either one of those things happening this upcoming year. And then the second thing that I like about this trade is the fact that the Florida Panthers are doing this with their core already solidified, being a top end core in the NHL, right? We saw Aaron Ekblad. He would have been a Norris Trophy candidate had he been healthy for the full season. Barkov is a guy that can be a 90 point player. Huberto is a guy that's right up there, 90 to 100 point player. Okay. So when I see that and I say, okay, this is a team that's doing it the right way. Another team that's doing it the right way is the Detroit Red Wings by getting Nedeljkovic. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Versus a team, again, not to be too critical here, but like the Philadelphia Flyers that are kind of plugging up the dam. I mean, the ship is taking on water and they're putting on wood planks, getting Ristolainen in there and Ryan Ellis. And you're kind of thinking, okay, this would make sense if they had that same kind of core that the Florida Panthers do.
It's spot on what you're saying. And they got Cam Atkinson, who's a nice player. Ryan Ellis is a very nice player. I mean, now they have two top 30 fantasy defensemen. It's probably going to be Provorov and Ellis, right, Robbie, on the top pair, which we both love. We both like those players individually. I like what Ellis brings for Carter Hart's bounce back appeal. That said, I totally agree with you that the core in place for the Flyers, maybe outside of Sean Couturier. I mean, who's jumping out at you as like some out of this world player on that team? I just don't see it. So therefore, could they be a fringe bounce back team that makes the playoffs? Absolutely. Could some of these, you know, returns that they're giving the other teams, I mean, the amount that they gave up for Rasmus Ristolainen, who's in a contract year, it's not even like they have, you know, him in his middle age, like locked up for a long time, and they're taking a calculated risk on him. I don't know if you could find a calculated risk on Rasmus Ristolainen based on his performance in Buffalo, but then to give up that much to get him, very concerning for the long term, speaking of the Flyers.
Yeah, and that's perfectly said, because short term, this does help the team. This does make them, you know, a sixth, seventh, or eighth seed in the East. There's no question in my mind about that. And it also says that Chuck Fletcher is willing to go out there and believe in Carter Hart, which is exactly what these moves are indicating to me, that, hey, he had one bad season, you know, and we're going to invest in him and give him the defense, and then there's no excuses. So for Ristolainen's sake, I mean, if you're a big Twitter user, I mean, you read every negative reaction possible. I don't have anything more to say on that other than I will be positive here, Pete, and say, getting out of a situation like Buffalo, where the past however many years Ristolainen has been there have been so bad, especially from a defensive standpoint, that I think you have to give him an opportunity here with a fresh slate to really find his game. And in fantasy, the biggest thing, you know, on my teams has always been category coverage guys. And if you can get one late in drafts that hits, that if you're in a league that counts blocks, he's so good for those categories. So I would certainly say Ristolainen is probably going to have his best season in the NHL so far. Again, the ceiling is not as high as we thought it was when he entered the league, but I really do like the bounce back appeal. And then for Ryan Ellis, I would go out on a limb here and say I like him better than Provorov. He just has more tools, Pete. And I think Provorov, maybe it wasn't fair necessarily, but the scouts kind of projected him as this high-end offensive defenseman that can play both ways. He certainly fits the latter half of that description, just without the high-end offense. And we haven't seen that team have a power play quarterback since Shane Gosper, when he absolutely popped off a few seasons ago. I kind of see Ryan Ellis hitting that 50-point floor this season, maybe can get upwards of 60 if things really go well. I'm just not seeing the offensive tools to make that happen, but certainly wouldn't be opposed to drafting Ryan Ellis around the top 25 defenseman overall.
I think it's really interesting about the Flyers, like swapping Atkinson for Voracek. Voracek last year, I didn't even remember it because it was so under the radar, but he was tied for their scoring lead with like 43 points in the 56 game season, which is not too shabby. He's a great point producer. He's a two-time 80 plus point guy, but they're investing now instead in Cam Atkinson, who is a former 41 goal scorer. They're hoping that he bounces back and he could be the finisher on a group that definitely has some talent, but Voracek was getting a little older, a little past his prime, I think. And you could say the same for Claude Giroux. So at least they're mixing it up here. I mean, they're giving a lot up to make it happen, but they're going to have a new look. They're going to have some renewed optimism. I just wonder about will AV continue to fall out of favor a little bit as the coach? Will they eventually need to make a move in that department? I mean, that's just kind of like an elephant in the room, right? Like when things got bad last year in Philly, things kind of went off the rails. Like you didn't get the sense that everybody was on the same page with Carter Hart and some of these other things that were going wrong. So that's just my concern still about Philly. I think they're a fringe playoff team. I wouldn't be so quick to slot them into like the 7 or 8 seed, but I see where your head's at in terms of, you know, appreciating what they've done in years past and what their upside still is. They still have a decent young core. I'm a little more interested in like a team like Vancouver to get back into the Stanley Cup playoff mix next year after the moves they made. Robbie, what do you think about getting Connor Garland and then OEL Oliver Ekman-Larsson in a salary dump? But I mean, it's going to improve the team, right? That's a top four defenseman that a lot of teams would covet.
Well, I mean, he was a big time goal scorer too, right? For the Arizona Coyotes and a team, again, similar situation to Buffalo, where you just looked at their offense and it was just putrid. So if you have a guy that can score 20 goals on the back end, you know, joining a team that already has Quinn Hughes, who's probably the best offensive defenseman in the league, pound for pound. You also have guys there on the offense, Elias Pettersson, who, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be among the top 20 fantasy players overall. You have JT Miller, who's a jack of all trades. You have Brock Besser. And then now these guys come in, and OEL, I'm certainly intrigued by because his safety net is so much higher. I wouldn't go out and reach for him in drafts. No way, you know, because that's a deep team in Vancouver. Can only be so many cooks in the kitchen. But I think OEL, this is his best chance to prove, hey, I am that high-end player. Just got a little bit lost there the past few years in Arizona, which is no fault of the player. I can't imagine myself being in a situation like that. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people would struggle in a situation like that. So for him, it's a great bounce back opportunity. I love the Vancouver Canucks this year to make the playoffs. I think they're a top two team in the division there. And then for Connor Garland, I mean, same type of situation, Pete. This guy came out of nowhere and started to be fantasy relevant the past 2 years for the Arizona Coyotes. I mean, he had 22 goals in 68 games last season, including 10 power play points. And then this season, he had 39 points in 49 games, including 10 power play points. So the power play production was key for him. The even strength production was really good for him as well. And now he's going to factor in alongside either Pettersson or most likely Bo Horvat, who is very, very valuable in fantasy. So I'm seeing a lot of good things for the Canucks here. And I think there's going to be a couple other moves there. I think Holtby's name has been rumored to be maybe shipping out of there. So keep an eye on stuff like that. But in terms of offense and defense, they're looking really solid.
I like the moves for a couple of young goalies out there. Thatcher Demko, one of them, will certainly be a beneficiary of getting Ekman-Larsson. I know Edler is going to be out of there. He's been there forever, it seems like, but he's not. He's hitting the free agent market, so it's going to be OEL and Quinn Hughes. And then, of course, the great forward group that we saw 2 years ago make a deep run that you mentioned, all those guys. There's also Pod Colson, the rookie, that's going to be thrust into the equation, probably going to make the NHL roster here. Nils Höglander. These are just like second or third line guys that can step up and play in the top six if there's an injury or two. So they're very well equipped. And they're going back to that Pacific Division, which is outside of Vegas, is extremely weak. The Coyotes are going to the Central, where they're going to have a difficult time, of course, competing. And then, you know, but in that West Division, the Pacific Division, the traditional one, Vancouver can be, you know, we can put them on a little bit of a pedestal again, ahead of teams like the California teams and the Calgary Flames. And I guess the Edmonton Oilers are, you know, a shaky third in that division, but I don't have a ton of trust in that group beyond its top players right now with some of the moves they're making. But yeah, definitely hats off to Vancouver. They're going back for it. Benning's job, you know, might be a little shaky these days, but at least he made a big move to get two quality players in Garland and Sam Reinhart. Speaking about two of the guys that were traded this weekend, two of the top forwards. I mean, these were two of the breakout, surprising, based on ADP players in the whole league last year, right? Nobody was expecting these guys to do much. So now they get a little bit of an upgrade in their supporting casts, and we'll see if they're for real, I think, this year. I think they are for real. If they can produce like that on bad teams like that, put some talent around them, it's going to be fun to watch both of those guys. I view them a lot differently right now.
No, I do too, and I don't think Benning deserves the criticism that he gets. When we see free agency start here at the end of the week, I'm really keying on the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, Ken Holland goes out there, re-signs Mike Smith to a 2-year deal, which I mean, again, Mike Smith played well last year. He deserves credit, but this is a team that features Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in their prime. Okay, we don't know how long these careers will last. You have to go out and you have to be in win now mode. And when you see a guy like Steve Yzerman, who's the best GM in the league, in my opinion, go out and get a guy like Nedeljkovic for a very low cost, Pete, and then immediately re-sign him, it does warrant some questions for these other GMs on teams that have a really, really solid core. So it's stuff like that where I give, you know, a lot of credit to a guy like Jim Benning, who has withstood the criticism, gone out there and made some moves, been pretty bullish about the players that have been drafted there, and now they've got guys around them to make them flourish. So I like that a lot. But yeah, I'm kind of left scratching my head, you know, for a team like Edmonton bringing in Duncan Keith, which again, Pete, I mean, this is not 2012, and a guy like Mike Smith, again, it's not 2005. You know, that to me is a little questionable.
Right. And on the flip side, I mean, look at Chicago. They shedded Duncan Keith's salary, and then they went out and got Seth Jones, which was another one of the biggest mega trades of the weekend. And a lot of people are critical of the contract, you know, the big money that might get devoted here to Seth Jones in Chicago. But this is an elite defenseman that's 26 years old. I'll go to bat and say that. Could he get worse from this point on, maybe 2 or 3 years down the line? Of course, we've seen it with all the guys, PK Subban, Shea Weber, you know, those types of names. But, you know, I just really like Seth Jones. I like he's a selfless player. He's a two-way player. He's going to make Chicago significantly better this upcoming season. And when I was talking about young goalies that benefit, the first thing that jumped out to me was like Kevin Lankinen was so good last year with a complete, you know, disaster of a defense at some points. And like now he's going to have Seth Jones in front of him to go along with the star-studded group of Patrick Kane and DeBrincat, and Jonathan Toews might be back. So really exciting times in Chicago once again.
It is. And I think this move from an organization standpoint says, hey, we've got years left out of Patrick Kane, who, by the way, he's been better than a point per game in 8 of his past 9 seasons. Jonathan Toews, who, oh, he's coming back next season, ready to go. Great. Kirby Dach, who's one of the most exciting young prospects in the league. And then you have guys like Kubalik, who can score 30 goals when he's hot. And now you have a guy like Seth Jones on the back end. That says, hey, we've got a window left with these top guys, and we're going for it. And in Chicago, as we know, Pete, if there's one team in the NHL that just needs to make the playoffs to make noise, it's the Chicago Blackhawks, or it used to be the LA Kings, right? So just get there and then make it happen in the playoffs. And with Lankinen now as their goalie, who really emerged as a great fantasy asset too, I love this move. And yeah, there was a lot of criticism that this was some bad contract for Seth Jones, but let's just keep in mind here, this is an elite defenseman who, again, was in a tough situation in Columbus. He really had to do a lot of the heavy lifting on most nights for that team. I don't see any reason in which he does not succeed with the Chicago Blackhawks. You put him on power play one with Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Kirby Dach, and this guy's going to light it up. And yeah, it's a long contract, but he's a top-end defenseman in the league. That's the market value.
I don't understand the criticism of the Seth Jones deal. If I'm being completely honest here, I know we had a down year, and people look at the analytical metrics, right? And they get a little concerned by that. I don't buy it. I love the deal for Chicago. I really do. I think Seth Jones, like Rob said, in Columbus, a lot of responsibility, defensive responsibility. I like Seth Jones as a player for Chicago. I do.
And you really didn't hear a peep out of him the whole time with all the Tortorella stuff or anything. So that just speaks to his leadership. He's going to go to a core that has multiple championships under its belt. I know Keith is gone, but Toews and Kane are still there. But I think that definitely in terms of like the future of Chicago, like Dach is really promising. They got Dach and his brother. They got Jones and his brother. That's a cool storyline for them. But it feels like a second wave for Chicago in terms of, you know, getting back into the thick of things as an actual contender, not just a fringe playoff team. Last year, even with their faults, they were right there with teams like Dallas and Nashville for the last spot in that 1-year division. But I think back to the Central, I could see them competing with teams like the St. Louis Blues and the Dallas Stars and those same Predators who are going into a bit of a rebuild on a nightly basis. It's going to be fun to watch. And Seth Jones, Robbie, I think can be viewed as a top 10, 15 fantasy defenseman again now. Do you agree? I mean, this guy scored 57 points with the Blue Jackets. Sometimes like their leading scorers right through the years were 50, 55 points or even 40, 45 points. I mean, that's gold right there.
I have him slotted in at number 10, and nice. I think that's a little conservative. I think he could finish top five. He's a great category coverage asset. But it goes, the reason why I have him at 10, and some people may say that's a little bit high, is because of the division. I think they have a great opportunity, you know, to be better than the Dallas Stars, to certainly be better than the Nashville Predators. I think they're right around where Minnesota is, but Chicago has more upend talent than Minnesota does too over the full roster. So I think they're a safe team to make the playoffs in again, maybe fifth, sixth kind of seed there. And then with Lankinen, it just makes me sure that Seth Jones can succeed there because he's going to be bailed out when he needs to be. He can flourish offensively. And the price they paid to get him, it was a little bit much. You know, Boqvist is a good young player. I think he'll do well with Columbus. But the reason why I like this for Seth Jones individually is because he also doesn't have a lot of competition on that blue line now. You know, he can be the guy. He's got other guys around him that can lock it down defensively. And now we can see Seth Jones, I think, take that next step and be the guy that we know he can be. And we saw him be that early in his career. It's only fair to say that.
Definitely. And you mentioned Boqvist. Blue Jackets also got Jake Bean in addition to Jacob Voracek. So as much as there's a changing of a guard there, another season where they're going to lose one of their best players in the offseason, definitely still have some young talent. And Voracek's going to go out there and probably lead that team in scoring. You know, as much as we like Patrick Laine's bounce back appeal and what Roslovic showed, it's probably just going to be a quiet, nice performance for Jacob Voracek going back to Columbus, where he played first three seasons, I believe, of his career. And then I also wanted to touch on what you mentioned about Nedeljkovic. As much as you could say Nedeljkovic is going to a rebuilding situation in Detroit, there's definitely something special brewing in Detroit right now with what they did getting Vrana and now Nedeljkovic in what feels like a steal of a trade with Carolina. I'm not sure why Carolina kind of dumped them like that, but it's a great spot for Nedeljkovic to exceed expectations, right? We were with Carolina thinking this guy's going to be a top 10 goalie in fantasy this year. Maybe the expectations would have been a little too high. Now it's going to get scaled back and he'll probably be available well outside the top 100 overall, maybe top 125, 130, maybe even later than that if it's a non-keeper league. But Nedeljkovic led the league in save percentage last year, 932. So I really like his long-term prospects and I like what Stevie Y is cooking right now.
Well, his long-term prospect is so high now with the Detroit Red Wings. Like, that team is building it the right way. They're doing it methodically. They're doing it with vision. I thought they had a nice performance in the draft on Friday night, too, in the first round. And then their supplementary picks were pretty spot on as well. So you can't say a lot of bad things about the future. Now, for this season upcoming, I had Nedeljkovic going from a top 10 goalie. He was 10 overall to just outside the top 25. And that's not a slight knock on the player. That's just the situation. When you look at Detroit's defense, you're definitely going to be, you know, wondering, okay, can these guys help him a lot? Well, if Moritz Seider steps in and is a great Calder Trophy finalist, Pete, maybe, but I think it might be a little bit of a fair statement that his numbers will come down this season. His win total is probably going to decline. That 930 save percentage that was so nice and shiny last year is probably going to be closer to 915. But again, it's not a knock on the player. It's the team structure. They're going to have some good nights. They're going to have some bad nights. Nedeljkovic is still a guy that I would roster as a number three goalie in fantasy. I just don't think you can mortgage the success of your fantasy team on a rebuilding team like the Red Wings. But from a keeper in Dynasty League perspective, this is a guy you got to zero in on. And really, hats off. I think Stevie hit this one out of the park. You know, identified the guy, saw his talent last year, paid the price. And yeah, Carolina, I'm not exactly sure. Hopefully we see kind of what they're doing the rest of the week here, Pete, and it'll make more sense. But right now, I think if you're a Hurricanes fan, you're definitely hurting a little bit over this one.
And they still have Peter Mrazek and James Reimer as UFAs right now. You wonder if Carolina is going to maybe seek elsewhere for some support on the free agent market on goalies. I mean, definitely we wanted to mention about this show and shows moving forward. We're going to keep, you know, checking in with you after some major moves. Like, we, you know, there was plenty to talk about from this weekend with trades and the Seattle Kraken, which we'll get to in a little bit. But we'll definitely come at you again with free agent updates. And then we'll get into, you know, the bread and butter type season preview shows that we bring to you every year, like sleepers and mock draft and all kinds of things like that. Breakout players, top rookies, really excited for that. But, you know, this is kind of like we're checking in with you here based on what we know at the moment. And what we know at the moment is that the Red Wings are definitely trending in the right direction, and they don't feel like a last place team anymore. They still have Dylan Larkin. They still have Philip Ronick, who we've been really high on. They also have a nice prospect, Lucas Raymond. We'll see if he makes the lineup. A lot trending in the right direction for Detroit.
So one key storyline that's going to be huge in fantasy to keep an eye on is whether or not the same roster rules will apply this season. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because of the goalie rule. Teams were carrying three goalies last year. In fantasy, you really benefited from that because you could always get a guy on the waiver wire to get that start for you. We saw it with the Washington Capitals last year with Vitek Vanacek, who was selected by the Seattle Kraken in the expansion draft. He was a guy that was called upon in a weird situation, Pete, and really excelled. And that's the reason why Seattle went out there and picked him in the draft. Now, the instant reaction is, wow, that hurts the Capitals big time. The flip side of that is for Samsonov, he's the clear-cut number one guy. For Nedeljkovic in Detroit, he's the clear-cut number one guy. And you're going to see that this year. If the roster rules, if we're only carrying two goalies on NHL teams in the regular season, you're going to need those guys that can be the workhorse again. It's going to be less about the tandem and more about having that true number one. So certainly keep an eye on that. I've been very positive on the show thus far. I'm going to be a little bit less so. I think about the results of the Kraken's draft. I know that you like them, Petey. I'm not super, super high on them the first year in fantasy.
That makes sense. And definitely the goalie tandem, I think, is one of the strengths of the roster. But it's going to boil down to what that defense is going to be in front of them. I mean, they got Mark Giordano. They got Vince Dunn. I like the Dunn, acquisition through the expansion draft. He's an RFA. They'll have to sign him, but he seemed excited about the move. I saw he posted the logo on his Instagram. So, you know, you expect him to be there. You expect him to be the number one defenseman, a guy that's been overshadowed through the years by some big names in fantasy, like Petrangelo, Torrey Krug, Colton Parayko. You know the list by now, but, you know, I really like Vince Dunn's point potential after this move. I think he could be one of their leading scorers with like 40 to 45 and really take that next step in his career. I definitely see what you're saying, though, about the holes in the forward group. I was a little less worried when I saw they drafted Yanni Gourde, and you could say, oh, he would play top line with Jordan Eberle and whoever else they throw on the left side. But now Gourde might miss the first month or two of the season. So how is that team going to start out of the gate? At least they're in a pretty favorable division, maybe the most favorable in the Pacific. Otherwise, they'd really be in some deep trouble. But of course, it's the first year of momentum. We weren't absolutely wowed by the expansion draft selections by the Golden Knights, other than Fleury, and look at how they turned out. They actually made the Cup final in their first year. So they swung more trades than the Kraken did. But I still think don't underestimate Seattle in year one, to have a playoff competitive team in such a weak division.
And before, you know, the jury's out on that team, it's not written in stone yet. I want to see if they make any splashes in free agency here on Friday and then the rest of the summer to see what they do. So again, it's early. This is just instant reaction. I was just a little bit disappointed that they didn't come out of that draft with a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury. Pete, I think you had an opportunity to select one of two players to be the face of the franchise, and either Vlad Tarasenko, who's rumored to be 100% healthy, or Carey Price, who does have a bit of an albatross contract on the back end. But you got to put butts in seats. You got to have the excitement. You got to have the face of the franchise. And I think either one of those two guys would have made me feel a lot more positive about this team in fantasy. The second thing is, I do think Yanni Gourde, whether he's fully healthy or not, he can be the Jonathan Marchessault, where he had really good underlying numbers in his previous situation. And then with a bigger workload, I think he could excel offensively. That is a big if. Certainly it is to be seen, Pete. I mean, playing on a team like Tampa, if either you or I on the third line there, we're getting points, you know, and we're getting good contracts. I mean, look at all these guys. Barkley Goudreau's getting paid. You know what I mean? Like, you suit up on Tampa, you win a championship, and you're getting paid. bar none, period. And you're getting points too. So, you know, you have to be a little bit skeptical, but I would give Biani the benefit of the doubt. And then beyond that, though, you know, I like Vince Dunn. I like him as a late round target, Pete, but, you know, maybe Jordan Eberle will be the guy they rely on offensively. I'm just not seeing a whole lot beyond that. And then for the goalies, I love Chris Drieger, but not so much this year. I like Vitek Vanacek, but not so much this year. And then where's Koskinen? What happened there? Why is Koskinen, Kaapo Kakkonen, why is he not a part of the Minnesota, part of the Seattle Kraken, right? So
I don't know.
I just have a couple questions, you know, and again, they can totally prove me wrong. You said it well, they're in a division where they can compete right away, which is good. The California teams do have good prospects, but they're not ready yet. So it's good for Seattle. It'll be exciting to see them suit up. I'm just not going too heavy on them in fantasy.
I agree. I was disappointed for Seattle that they didn't take Kakkonen, that they didn't take Jake Bean. They took Morgan Geeky over Jake Bean. I can't understand that one, but they have their reasoning. I mean, he used to be right. Francis used to be in the Canes organization. So he gets the final benefit of the doubt. He's the GM. So Seattle will trust that for now. And then I think that definitely for Seattle, Jordan Eberle has a high point ceiling again. He leaves the Barry Trotz system as a better overall player. And now you could see him unleashed a little bit and be the featured forward again. Let's see if he can get back into the 60s or 70s. 70s is very unlikely. 60s may be a little bit more reasonable if he's going to lead them in scoring, even if they miss the playoffs. So he's been in 60 plus, I think, three times. And another time he hit 59 with the Islanders. So he does have a high ceiling. He'll be on power play one. He'll play with Gord when he comes back, so you'll get that in-season boost. But opening night roster, who's their number one center going to be? Is it going to be Jared McCann? If it is, that's a problem. I like Jared McCann, but putting him up there against, right, Pedersen, Horvat, players like that, McDavid, Draisaitl, Anze Kopitar in that division, Sean Monahan in that division, I don't like that prospect at all. That's a mismatch almost every night unless you're playing, you know, teams like the Ducks or the Sharks.
Yeah, Jared McCann, former Maple Leaf great for 2 days there, I think 48 hours. If you got the McCann jersey, hats off to you. But no, I agree. I mean, that doesn't excite me. They did, you know, have a draft selection number 2 overall. Beniers is the kid from Michigan. Could be, you know, really have a good season if he goes back to school. And then you start to kind of feel good about their long-term outlook. So, you know, we'll keep an eye on Seattle. I did want to touch on the Tarasenko situation, Pete. He obviously remained with the Blues. He's still a St. Louis Blue as of Monday here when we're recording this. So we'll keep an eye on that situation. But they went out and got Pavel Buchnevich from the New York Rangers, who had a tremendous season last year. He really finally took that step. We all knew he could do. He did it, produced really well for that team. Now he's joining St. Louis. What was your initial reaction to that trade, Buchnevich for Sammy Blais?
Well, they're going for a different organizational outlook, clearly, if you're going to overpay for Barclay Goodrow and then trade Pavel Buchnevich because he had his breakout season in his contract year as an RFA. So I think the Blues got a major score here. If they do trade Tarasenko, they'll still be set with their right wings, with David Perron and Buchnevich. If they keep them, they might have the best right wing depth in the league, or maybe one of them switches to the other side. Time will tell. But the Blues, I think, get a little bit better by making that trade. The Rangers get a little bit worse. The Rangers have to now insert on both of their top two lines, two of the three guys that we've been harping on for so long, Kaapo Kakko, you know, Alexi Lafreniere, if he's playing on the right side. I know he's mostly a left wing, but he did play on the right side last year. And then there's also, you know, Kravtsov. So they have the young guys. We've been clamoring for them to give those guys top line roles or first power play roles. Now the stage is set for those guys, but they better work out. Otherwise, you just gave away a great point producer that had amazing chemistry with Mika Zibanejad. You got to look at Zibanejad a little bit differently without Buchnevich, unfortunately. I'd be maybe a little less likely to take Zibanejad in the second round. I don't know if you agree, Robbie, but it's just a little chemistry lost for Big Z.
And that's a really good point, because it's kind of the fear of the unknown with the Rangers. You know what you had with Buchnevich. You saw the chemistry. You really saw that group take a step forward. And then you kind of take a step or two back by getting rid of him, which you already know that he was a good fit there. So Chris Drury, you know, as the GM, he's making some big moves. I don't expect that team to be finished. You know, if they go out and get a Jack Eichel or something like that, we're going to be talking about this team in a completely different light. But I do think that warrants a little bit of discussion on one incident that happened in the regular season where I think a lot of these moves are stemming from was a game versus the Washington Capitals when things got very physical. Tom Wilson, you know, right or wrong, kind of took over that game, got ejected from it. They didn't really have a response to that. And I think that's where a lot of this gut reaction is coming from. Hey, we need a guy like Barkley Goudreau. We need a guy like Sammy Blais to get in there and be more physical. Well, you know, okay, but you also need to have a high-powered offense, especially in that division with all the good young goalies. So I'm not sure exactly the direction they're going in. Luckily, it's still a long offseason, Pete, ahead of us, and they can do more moves. But from a fantasy lens, losing that Buchnevich to Zibanejad connection is one that's definitely not leaving the best taste in my mouth.
I mean, still so much of a ceiling with that roster. Even if, you know, Zibanejad is a slight step back not having Buchnevich, there's still Panarin, there's still Shesterkin, and there's still Norris Trophy winner Adam Fox, who had an amazing season. I don't think he's hit his peak just yet. So still a very exciting time for the Rangers. I think they're just trying to figure out some of those secondary names and, you know, fill in the gaps in a different way, like you said, and be more like the Islanders, who kind of took it to them a couple of those games, like we talked about a few shows ago with Leboff, just how they were kind of left mystified after by the style of play whenever they would run into a team like that. And so they're going to have to shift their focus, and I think they're doing that. So, but yeah, Buchnevich, I think he'll be behind in our next rankings, which we'll do this week prior to free agency on Wednesday, July 28th. You know, we'll do our rankings. You'll see Buchnevich behind a Sam Reinhart around the top 100, maybe a little bit outside. You know, I think I would probably rather have like a Cole Caulfield than Buchnevich, just looking at some of the players ranked in that range. But, you know, Buchnevich still has a high ceiling if he's playing with Ryan O'Reilly or Braden Schenn. So, and those guys are fixtures on that St. Louis team. St. Louis is still, you know, even though they got swept by the Avs in the playoffs, they're still a bona fide playoff team with a lot of high-end talent. You know, Buchnevich now a part of that. But for a Buchnevich keeper league fantasy manager, I think you're hoping right now it's hinging. You're hoping that Tarasenko is traded if you're looking at Buchnevich's ceiling for next year coming down if Tarasenko stays.
Yeah, and I'm still super high on the Rangers overall, and I think one of Kako or Lafreniere is going to take that next step. Lafreniere had zero power play points last year, so, you know, hey, that's an easy omen there. Get him on the first unit, get some more points, right, Petey? Two other fringe moves that might warrant a sentence or two. Nolan Patrick ends up in Vegas somehow. Cody Glass ends up in Nashville somehow. Both of these guys were/are highly touted prospects, Pete. Nolan Patrick, you know, got off to a little bit of an unfortunate start in his career with some injury and health problems. Cody Glass never really got the full opportunity with Vegas. Do you like either one of those guys, maybe as like your last round pick or like an early season waiver wire guy?
I mean, I like Cody Glass a little bit more. I was surprised that he really didn't, even when Vegas had some injuries, like they never really seemed to give him an extended look on the first line. I think in Nashville, it's a little tricky still because they got so many dollars devoted to players like Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson. But if they could get Cody Glass, whether he's on the wing or center, in the top six, I think he'll get a big role and he'll produce far more points than he did in Vegas. It's a, you know, a top tier draft pick that just has kind of been underwhelming because of the role he was given in Vegas. So he'll go to a worse team, but he'll have a bigger role and can definitely factor in to try to keep Nashville a little bit more competitive during the rebuild. I mean, Patrick's just a total out, you know, I don't know what to expect at this point. Can he stay healthy for a full season? Is he the top six caliber player that he was drafted to be? You would lean towards probably not. So I would lean towards Cody Glass here because of the situation and because he'll get a big role. But it's, yeah, there are a ton of, you know, smaller moves here. And I'm definitely interested with the draft just to see either of these guys, Beniers or Owen Power, like, does either dare to come into the NHL this year and leave college? Of course, Michigan's going to be star-studded for the upcoming season. They also have Luke Hughes coming in. But if one of them dares to come out, I think Beniers is probably a little bit smarter to come out right now in terms of joining the Kraken, where he might be in the top six because of the state of their roster. If I was Power, I would stay in college rather than joining the Sabres at this point in time. You assume they're going to trade Jack Eichel at some point this offseason. So it's probably going to be a little rough sledding right now for the Sabres next season.
Yeah, that's a tough sell for me going out and drafting a rookie defenseman in fantasy from the Buffalo Sabres. There's no argument that's going to make me sign up for that one. So I agree with you. Michigan will be stacked. It'd probably be good for the young guys to finally kind of see that winning way and not have that with the Buffalo Sabres year one. I do think, you know, quickly, Nolan Patrick's a guy I'm intrigued by, Pete. If he plays alongside someone like Alex Tuck, you've got two big guys that are on the third line that can probably produce together. And with Chandler Stephenson, if they're going to commit to that as their number one center for next season, if they don't, you know, get in on Jack Eichel or one of these other players, that could be something where Nolan Patrick, you know, kind of finds his game, former number two overall pick, and maybe even gets a shot with guys like Pacioretty or Mark Stone. Again, wouldn't draft this player, but just something to keep an eye on. It's so early. We've got plenty more, you know, offseason coverage for you guys. But, you know, Pete and I are always scheming. You got to stay two steps ahead of the game here. We're trying to do that for every one of the listeners.
You do, for sure. And one keeper league note, I was surprised that William Eklund fell down to the Sharks at number 7. I actually thought that was a really great pick by them. It was an obvious pick because he fell. But this is a guy that played really well in the Swedish Hockey League. And I think if he joins that team immediately, the sooner the better, right? Sometimes you say, oh, long-term project, but he's equipped to join that team immediately, potentially. And I just think it's a big score for them. I mean, saw their highest draft selection since 2003. And this team has been competitive for so long, but has not really sniffed a quality young player of his caliber in quite some time. So that was one thing I was a little excited about over the weekend, seeing Eklund go to the Sharks, where I think he could have a big role immediately. Other than that, and maybe Beniers, there are not a lot of guys in this first round that are projected to play in the NHL next season. So if you're in a keeper league, keep your eye on Eklund right now, Robbie.
And we'll have, oh no, I love Eklund as well, Pete, and we'll have more keeper dynasty stuff closer to the start of the regular season. Right now, you know, there wasn't a lot of information on these guys the past year for scouting restrictions and everything due to COVID. So, you know, right, keep an eye on that. We'll have more coverage closer to the start of the season. And then hopefully, you know, we can touch base on another show here after maybe a big Eichel trade or some big signings towards the end of the week, Petey.
Yeah, so we have free agency coming up this week. We'll have our updated rankings the following week. Then we'll start diving into top 10 rookies, top 10 sleepers, top 10 bounce backs. And then we'll start rolling out some podcasts, you know, here and there, approaching the season, which is going to start in early October. It'll be here before we know it. So everybody should enjoy the summer, enjoy all the transactions, and keep it tuned to here for the occasional episodes during the month of August. We're excited about it. And so for Bob Bender, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen, we'll talk to you after free agency, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks for tuning in.